Amy Bean Stoll will now share our scripture reading.
Good morning. Today's scripture is Exodus 16, 1 through 15. The whole congregation of the Israelites set out from Elim, and Israel came into the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai. On the 15th day of the second month, after they departed from the land of Egypt, the whole congregation of the Israelites complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and ate our fill of bread. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill the whole assembly from hunger." Then the Lord said to Moses, "I'm going to rain bread from heaven for you, and each day from people shall go out and gather enough for the day. In that way I will test them, whether they will follow my instruction or not. On the sixth day, when they prepare, they bring in, if it will be twice as much as gather on other days." So Moses and Aaron said to the Israelites, "In the evening you should know that it was the Lord who brought you out to the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your complaining against the Lord. But what are we that you complain against us?" And Moses said, "When the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening, and you fill the bread in the morning, because the Lord has heard the complaining that you utter against him, what are we? Your complaining is not against us, but against the Lord." Then Moses said to Aaron, "Say to the whole congregation of the Israelites, draw near to the Lord, for he has heard your complaining." And Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the Israelites. They looked toward the wilderness, and the glory of the Lord appeared in a cloud. The Lord spoke to Moses and said, "I have heard the complaining of the Israelites. Say to them, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you should have your fill of bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God." In the evening, quails came up and covered the camp. In the morning, there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the layer of dew lifted on the surface of the wilderness, was a fine flaky substance as fine as frost on the ground. When the Israelites saw it, and they said to one another, "What is it?" For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, "It is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat."
Thank you, Amy. So I've chosen to stay with the Exodus story for a little bit here, to come back again this Sunday. And in this story we just heard read, the Israelites have been delivered. The army's gone. They're free, they're no longer slaves, but now they're in the wilderness. And none of them knew anything about living in the wilderness, except perhaps Moses. Wilderness is one of the most evocative places in Bible stories, beginning with this very first primary wilderness story. Again and again in the scriptures, wilderness shows up. And actually, if you look at the geography of the Middle East, you can understand why. Because for every area, sometimes pretty large, where there's human habitation, there is close by an area of wilderness and desert. Dry, rocky, often mountainous. The deserts of this part of the world are harsh and dangerous, terribly hot in the daytime and cold at night, with only occasional sources of water, if you know where to look. In the Bible stories, wilderness is a place of testing and trial, a place of challenge and danger. And it is a place where faith and trust in God are challenged. Because out in the wilderness, when you're stripped of all your support and comfort, you're left with nothing but the resources of your spirit, your faith in God. Those Israelites coming out of Egypt had no idea what was coming. Egypt was a land with cities. Egypt was a land where the Nile allowed the fields to be irrigated and fertile. Once they hit the wilderness, their first challenge was water. At the end of chapter 15, we read that within 3 days of crossing the Red Sea and being delivered from the Egyptian army, they were thirsty and they were crying out, "What shall we drink? What are we doing out here?" God helped Moses find a source of water. And then a little later, they came to an oasis called Elim, which had 12 springs and many trees. But from there, Moses led them further into the wilderness. Presumably, I guess, they were carrying water, but very soon they were hungry and complaining again. Older translations, instead of saying complaining, use the word murmuring, which I really like because you can almost hear it, can't you? Most of them didn't want to go straight up to Moses and say anything, but they were murmuring among themselves. And finally, some came straight up to him, the leaders, and said, "Why didn't you just let us die in Egypt? At least there we had flesh pots." I think it just means pots of meat. It sounds so graphic, the flesh pots of Egypt, but I just think it means meat. We had stews that we could make that had some meat in them, and we had our fill of bread. You brought us out here into the wilderness to kill us with hunger. They had lived all their lives as slaves, forced to work for others, to do what their master said, but they'd also never had to find their own food. And even out here, if they had any luck hunting and gathering, how could the wilderness possibly support this whole crowd of people? Moses, they thought, had brought them out here into this wilderness, had taken them away from everything they knew. What good was freedom if you're going to die? And where were they going anyway? There's nothing like hunger to turn people angry. There's nothing like hunger to make me angry. They turned on their leader, as people do when things get tough. Moses was the only one who'd ever been in the wilderness before. How could this be his plan, to be out here without food? It's interesting, twice in this reading, Moses turns it back on them, saying, I'm not the one who's leading us. God is leading us. When you're complaining against God. But then God intervenes. God hears their complaints. God knows they're hungry, and God sent food. Quail were sent every evening, birds that they could catch and cook, and manna every morning. Somebody asked at Bible study Tuesday night, what's manna? Well, we really don't know. We really don't know. Miraculous food. Bread from heaven fell like frost every morning and covered the ground. They had to go out and gather it. And apparently, according to verse 23, it was something that could be baked or boiled. So it was like a grain or seeds. In fact, verse 31 says it looked like coriander seed, so small, and that it was white. And then when it was cooked, it tasted like wafers made with honey, which sounds pretty good. But the critical thing about manna was that you could only gather what you needed, but not more. If you continue past what Amy read, the verses say, "This is what God has commanded. Gather as much as each of you needs, an omer," which is some kind of a measurement, "to a person, according to the number of people, for those in your tent." So the Israelites did so, some gathering more, some less, but when they measured it with the omer, with the measure, those who gathered much had nothing extra, and those who gathered little had no shortage. They gathered each of them as much as they needed. Enough for everyone, but no extra for anyone. Do we hear how radical that is for 21st century American capitalists? Sounds pretty socialist to me. No one would have more than they needed, but everyone had enough. You didn't have to worry that somebody else was going to get too much and then you wouldn't have any. No one getting their needs met was going to take away from you. There was enough, truly enough, but only as they each took what they needed. Somehow I'm reminded, or when I mentioned that this week that I was doing this, I was reminded of the toilet paper shortage earlier this year. Why toilet paper was the thing, I still haven't figured out. But we all saw it, right? When people hoard, when they take too much because they're afraid there won't be enough, then there isn't enough to go around. And it took a while for stores to catch on and realize they were going to have to ration this, that people were being, interesting, irrational about toilet paper. The human instinct in respond to fear is to hoard, to think about only ourselves. And when we do that, it creates scarcity. There was enough toilet paper even, but not enough for people to stuff their closets full and have overflow their basements. Take what you need, and there'll be enough for everyone. And there will be enough for you to get more when you need it again. That's about living as part of a community. As we talked about this story Tuesday night in Bible study, the insight that was named that I had never really seen before was out there in the wilderness, they were being formed into a community. It could not be each for themselves and their own family. There was going to be enough, but only if everyone just took what they needed. God was making of them a community that was mutually connected, interdependent. Anthropologists who've studied traditional indigenous groups like the Kalahari Bushmen who live in challenging places describe the same principle at work. In their kinship groups, those that live together, if anyone gets a resource, someone kills an antelope, someone finds and is able to gather in some plants, some roots, whatever, it is shared in the whole community equally. No one gets extra, but everyone survives. Years ago, I read a sociological study in poor neighborhoods in South Side of Chicago, looking at what people considered their kinship groups, and they found the same reality. If someone who was considered kin, someone who had a need, then somebody else that was considered part of that group was expected to meet the need. No one got ahead in those kinship circles in that poor community in South Chicago. No one saved up in our middle-class American way of thinking that you should. And maybe we would say no one seemed to be planning ahead. But everyone in the kinship group survived. Somehow, everyone at least had enough to get by. Moses told them not to try to store it up, not to think they could save it for tomorrow. He told them they had to trust God, that God would send more. But of course, some of them doubted. Some of them didn't believe. They stashed some extra away at night, trying to make sure there would be some. And the next morning, it was wormy. It had gone bad. Manna forced the people to take only what they needed. And manna forced the people to trust God to supply their needs again tomorrow. Give us this day our daily bread, Jesus taught us to pray. The bread we need for today, not for tomorrow and next week and next year. Now on the sixth day, God gave them extra. They could take a double share on the sixth day because God also knew they needed Sabbath. They needed a day of rest. The daily food, quails and manna was God's powerful way of forming them into a community of faith. They had to trust and they had to share. There was no other way to survive in that wilderness. The only way to live was trusting that God would give what they needed when they needed it. I think the learnings from this passage are in some ways so obvious, but they are so challenging. God calls us into community with one another. Give us this day our daily bread is not just about me and my family. It's about all of us. Give us this day, all of us, what we need. No, not all we want or all we might think we need, but there is enough. There is still enough on this earth for all of us, humans and animals and plants, to have what we need. But we have to learn not to hoard. We have to think beyond just ourselves and our small circle. And it is a deeply radical challenge to our American ways of living. But the promise is that God will supply our needs. And this is not just in terms of physical needs, of course. This is about all kinds of needs. Emotional needs, social needs, spiritual needs. So much of what traps us in worry is our fear about the future. But we can't get now what we'll need in November or December or January. We can only receive now what we need for today. So we have to learn to live more in the present, more in the now, as spiritual traditions all try to teach us. We will be given, we are given, what we need for today. And we have to learn again and again to trust God with tomorrow. One day at a time, the 12-step groups say. Sometimes it's 1 hour at a time. The promise of this story is that there is enough, not necessarily extra. Because what we need most is not something we can store up and stuff our closets with. But there is enough for today. And that enough is found in community with one another. In this challenging and even threatening time, we are called to lean on each other, to support each other, and to remind each other again and again that we walk by faith and not by sight. We're called to strengthen and encourage each other. And our spiritual food, our manna, is found in community with brothers and sisters, with our neighbors, even the ones we may not always agree with. We're all in this wilderness together. No matter our politics or our beliefs about viruses, we're all being impacted, all struggling to make sense of our times and to get through. We can make the choice every day to go forward in faith and to share love and mercy as we can. As we share what we can, as we walk by faith, there will be enough. Enough love, enough mercy, enough kindness to keep us safe and strong in this wilderness.